this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, right now, they're the views of Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, who certainly is very, very concerned about the use of psychiatric drugs, the SSRI, that's the serotonin reuptake inhibitors. Dr. Tracy, thank you so much, very much for being with us again. And bring us up to date about what's happening with the use of Prozac, these other psychotropic drugs.
Well, thanks, Dan. It's good to be on. I don't know if your listeners need a quick overview.
Go ahead, give them a quick overview.
Basically, the short of it is that these drugs do the exact opposite of what we're being told that they do. In fact, the theory behind them is backwards. They've told everyone that their serotonin is low and depression, when in fact all the studies show that it's actually high. The problem is they put out these drugs to increase serotonin levels. So obviously, if the serotonin level was already high,
thank you very much,
we're having horrible problems because it's making everything worse. In fact, there was a study done out of Australia a few years ago. Dr. Murray Esler headed the study, and it was done on patients that are suffering from anxiety, post-traumatic stress, things like that. And he was shocked to find that their serotonin levels were 8 times higher than normal. He said, oh my gosh, why are we giving them these drugs that increase serotonin levels? And of course, I sat back and said, well, what do you think I've been trying to tell you all these years? So that's the first problem. We know that increased serotonin levels produce things like mania, which is increased, by the way, we now call that bipolar. That has had a 4,000% increase over just the last 10-year period.
Now you're speaking now a 4,000% increase in mania or what?
Yeah, right, or bipolar disorder.
All right, fine.
So we're chemically inducing this in so many people. But we also know that high serotonin leads to suicide. It can lead to violent crime, arson, substance abuse. First thing I saw with these drugs were the cravings for alcohol that were just absolutely incredible. People becoming alcoholic almost overnight. But now we've reached the point where the most popular of these drugs on the market today, Effexor, now has homicidal ideation listed as a side effect.
In fact, didn't you say that this fellow who was over there at the Virginia Tech, you know, who killed all the people, was actually somehow or other had been on these drugs in the past?
Well, the first report we got on that one was the police were saying that they found antidepressants. And then his roommates were saying, yes, that he took his medication that morning and went, you know, just a normal day, got up, took his medication, and went on. We know he was being treated for depression.
Oh, do we know what drug he was taking?
They've hit it all now.
Oh, did we have any idea what drug he was taking?
They didn't even release the toxicology.
Okay, we'll be back in just a moment with Dr. Ann Blake Tracy. Well, of course, one of the big problems is people get homicidal, don't they, when they're on these drugs?
Well, yes. Homicidal ideation means constant ruminating thoughts of killing and how to kill. That's the side effect.
And, of course, you know, we're seeing, people who actually, some of our veterans coming home from overseas, you know, are depressed or put on these psychotropic drugs, and they'll just black out and kill the person who's most important to them. They don't even remember doing it.
Exactly. And that is cosmic. It's a condition known as a REM sleep behavior disorder. Ambien has gotten a little bit of press on that disorder over the last little while. It's where you actually act out what it is that you're dreaming. We know, though, that 86% of the cases being diagnosed are patients taking an antidepressant. 86% of that disorder. We also know that 80% of those going into that disorder hurt themselves or someone else.
Well, what percent of the patients who do have, who take the Prozac or serum serotonin reabsorption inhibitors, what percent of those will get this abnormal reaction? Because it must help some of the patients, doesn't it?
There are a lot of patients that claim that they have been helped. Yes.
Okay. Go ahead. Speak right up here, please. Go ahead.
Generally, those are patients that don't know what the side effects are. Not everyone is going to suffer the worst side effects, just like not everyone suffers the worst side effects from an adverse reaction to penicillin. But we do know that 7 to 10% of the population don't even have the liver enzyme system they need to metabolize these drugs. So, of course, they're going to hit toxic levels quickly. 7 to 10% of those taking these drugs is a pretty high number anymore.
And then, Chris, they're selling an awful lot of Prozac and these other drugs. And are they warning people about the possible suicidal or homicidal ideologies that may come up when you're on these drugs? See, that's the problem. Don't realize that. And what about with children? My understanding is that only recently have they put a black box warning on. And hold that. We'll be back
exactly.
In just a moment here.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Tracy has been campaigning against Prozac for a good period of time. She's even written a book, Prozac, Panacea or Plague, and she's published that really at her own expense. She's looked at by most doctors, oh my goodness, you know, just always complaining, but she's pointing out that, 7 to 10% of people don't have the enzymes in the liver to actually detoxify these drugs, is that right?
That's right.
All right, because if you don't detoxify it, then it just keeps on working and you keep getting higher and higher serotonin levels
right.
In your brain. And when you do, you can get all sorts of abnormal reactions, including homicidal ideas and suicidal ideas. And, of course, there have been a fair number of people who've been on these drugs who actually committed murders and have killed themselves. So you pick the story up there, Dr. Tracy.
One very important thing to point out is that the head of the National Institute of Mental Health came out in August and finally said what I said clear back in 1994, and that is that these drugs are almost identical in action to PCP, angel dust. And what he said was that they had just run a study using ketamine. Ketamine is known in the street as Special K. It is a sister drug to PCP, and it is also a dissociative anesthetic. What a dissociative anesthetic is, in case your listeners aren't real familiar with it, is a drug that will anesthetize you, and yet you can still move and act and talk, and therefore you can work with the doctor. They thought that would be good in certain cases. So he said that these drugs work the same way. They tested the ketamine and found that ketamine got rid of depression immediately. Well, of course, anyone going under anesthesia is going to not feel anything, including depression. But what Gary is, he just went on to say that they work the same way. Antidepressants take a little bit longer to produce the same effect. So he was trying to say that what we need is a drug like ketamine that doesn't produce hallucinations, that would get rid of depression immediately. And what everyone should have said was, my gosh, these are anesthetics. Why are you anesthetizing this huge number of the population and telling them that this is a cure? Because when you look at brainwave patterns of somebody on one of these medications, that is exactly what you see, is an anesthetized brain.
With very, very high serotonin levels. Well, certainly, let's talk a little bit about children. What happens when you give these drugs to children, and what has been done recently?
Well, we know that children and the elderly are the two most likely groups to suffer adverse reactions from any medication. And recently the FDA did put black box warnings on antidepressants for anyone under the age of 18. And then just last year they increased that age to anyone under the age of 25.
Right, now, of course, a black box warning means there's a big black box printed on the label that tells about the side effects, and because it's a big black box, why you're supposed to read what's inside there, and that means that they want to caution you against that, and that's one of the things that the FDA does when they're concerned that there are all sorts of abnormal reactions. So they're saying that nobody younger than 25 should be taking this now.
Yeah.
But it was the closest thing
to banning a drug.
And of course, but this was given to a lot of children. The doctors were just giving it because they were told that this was good for children.
Oh, yeah. I know. And yet they found that there was double the chance of suicide.
In children who were taking the Prozac types of drugs then.
Right. Which is why they put the black box warning on saying, you know, you better not be using them, or you better be extremely cautious. Uh-huh. And yet I've got families that have lost children within a week to these drugs.
I mean, it'll take over that quickly, and they'll get really depressed and suicidal within a week?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how many children? Do we have any idea how many children, have committed suicide on this? Or is it just that you... I have a practice, you know, because you've written a book about the dangers of Prozac, that people gravitate to you.
Well, and they have. We do have on our website at drugawareness.org, if you click up toward the upper left-hand corner, there's a big blue button that says Database of SSRI Cases of Violence and Suicide. And we've tried to document anything that comes out in the press, but most reporters really don't know enough to ask in these cases. I've spent years, of course, calling reporters, asking what we know, calling families, asking if they were on something. I called Phil Hartman's family the day after their death and said, don't you stop until you find one of these drugs, because it will be there. And then I worked with them until we got all of the information, and sure enough, she was on Zoloft, and that company has settled those wrongful death suits.
Now, who is Phil Hartman? I don't know the case.
Comedian Phil Hartman is radio guy, on Saturday Night Live. He was one of the most popular, and he was really becoming extremely popular as a comedian. very talented.
Okay, fine. So basically,
his wife shot himself, shot him, and then herself.
I see. And because they did find that she was actually on what was Zoloft.
Zoloft.
Uh-huh. And of course, this is the tragedy that if you're not looking for it, you don't know that these drugs make people homicidal or suicidal. Why then?
Right.
You know, then you're not going to look for it. You're not going to understand that. And it's just, well, it's just another case of domestic violence. So.
Right. Well, another thing, too, is they're not being warned about mixing these drugs with other drugs. I mean, how many people are warned that you can't take cold or cough medications with these? If so, you get a PCP reaction.
No, by PCP, I mean you just become violently violent as far as your reaction is concerned. Like,
right, you can be that. Like I had a 14-year-old girl that was weaning off of her Paxil, and she developed the cough that so often comes when you do that, because the main function of serotonin is constriction of smooth muscle tissue. So you get constriction of the bronchial tube, constriction of the arteries, the veins, all the organs of smooth muscle tissue. When the serotonin level gets too high, you die of multiple organ failure, like Daniel Smith, Anna Nicole's son. He was taking 3 antidepressants plus methadone, all of which affect serotonin levels. His serotonin level just shot through the roof, and he died of multiple organ failure. That's what happened. So, anyway, this little girl was having her lungs start to congest because of that, and her mom, not knowing, gave her cough and cold meds. Well, on the second day, she literally ripped her schoolroom from one end to the other. And the mother called me in a panic, and I called back right after the mother had talked to me and asked if anyone had given her any orange juice to bring her blood sugar up, because I figured she was having an insulin shock-like reaction, which often goes hand-in-hand with these. And the head of the school, the administrator, said, yes, we've got 3 children that have diabetes, and all 3 of those, she just acted like any of those kids when they go into insulin shock. So, but anyway, you get that kind of a reaction when you mix these drugs. And that warning just does not get out to people. And one thing that is getting mixed often is a drug called Ultram, which is a painkiller. Ultram is an antidepressant. It is an SSRI. And doctors are prescribing it right along with this. Or they'll give trazodone along with it, saying that's for sleep. Trazodone's an SSRI as well. So they're mixing these drugs together, and it can be really dangerous for the patient.
You know, but
you can't ever just stop one either.
What happens if you stop it suddenly?
The FDA finally, along with the black box warning, said any abrupt change in dose of an antidepressant can cause suicide, hostility, or psychosis, generally a manic psychosis.
You have to wean yourself off of these, then. With
very slowly. Because I've got a tape or CD on how to come off the right way.
Well, of course, the thing is that you really become dependent upon these things, and the whole physiology of your brain changes.
That's
and
right.
You're getting these very, very high levels of serotonin that God
That's
never
right.
intended us to have. We're going to be back here in just a moment. And if you have any questions at all, our telephone number 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, Dr. Tracy, certainly, is there any concern within the general medical community? Certainly, I haven't had the opportunity to be dealing with this. This was way out of my field when I was practicing, and I haven't heard any discussions within the medical community when I go to my Friday meetings about the dangers of Prozac. Are the doctors becoming concerned about it?
No, they're all taking too much of it themselves. I just had a television crew come out from Moscow, Russia, to do a documentary on my work. And they wanted to film me doing a lecture. So I said, okay, we'll invite a few people over here to the house, and you can just film me giving a lecture to a group of people. That way it won't be, you know, just low-key, and it'll be easy to do. So we sent out just a few flyers, had people coming from 7 hours away. But, of course, the house was full. We had two psychiatric nurses that attended. And one stood up after the lecture. And she said, Dr. Tracy, you need to know that we never get to hear what you've told us here tonight. But, she said, I'm on one of these drugs. I'm on Lexapro. And I've suffered everything that you've talked about tonight. I can't deny it, because I know I've gone through it. But she said, you don't know what's going on out here. 75% of the doctors and nurses I work with are on these drugs. And of course, my first reaction was, oh my gosh, with amnesia listed as a frequent side effect of the drugs. That's how much it affects your memory. I said, how do you remember what your patients need? And she laughed and said, oh, we don't. And I caught my breath, and she said, we just kind of keep trying to remind each other what everybody needs, and then we laugh and joke about how we're getting older and forgetful. But she said, what drug reps are telling us is that we're in a very stressful profession, and that sooner or later, we got to know that we're going to need these, so we may as well just start now so that we're kind of nipping it in the bud.
Do we have any idea how much of the Prozac is being sold, or how much of the, what percentage of the population is on Prozac?
Oh, they hide that really well.
I know
I did a story with Salt Lake City Magazine clear back in 92, and a reporter tried every way that she could to find out.
Well, here you know, basically there was a book called A Brave New World. I think it was Aldous Huxley.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was that everybody was going to be on a drug. They were going to call it Soma. And that would make everybody feel better about themselves. I mean, they were all taking the drug. And that's really Prozac. It's so many people are on Prozac today. But what it's doing, I mean, we all have problems at one time or another. But once you get on these things, it's very difficult to get off of them, and it totally alters the metabolism of your brain, and it gets your serotonin level up. I know people who've taken it. They tell me they feel better, but what does it do over the long term as far as permanent changes in the brain? We're going to ask Dr. Tracy that and a lot of other questions, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Dr. Ann Blake Tracy. And Dr. Tracy, were you a general practitioner, psychologist, psychiatrist? What was your field?
I'm a PhD.
You're a PhD, okay.
Right. So I do more research and teaching.
All right. Well, is there any permanent effect? In other words, certainly we know that with a lot of medications, you're on them for a time, and for instance, Ritalin, with children, actually stunts their growth. Stunts their growth, shrinks the size of their
head. So do these drugs.
Beg your pardon?
So do these drugs, because they're stimulants as well. If you've got an antidepressant, the opposite of a depressant, what is it? It's a stimulant. And these are strong stimulants. So they stunt the growth as well. I mean, one single 30 milligram dose of Prozac has been shown to double your cortisol level. So you got to know that growth is stunted, the bones are being affected. In fact, there's been studies come out recently talking about how the bones are extremely brittle for elderly taking these drugs. And there's been warnings come out. But I've never seen a group of drugs that just literally destroy every body system that there is. Diabetes is rampant with these drugs. You almost always end up losing your gallbladder.
Well, now, has there been any studies that have shown an increase of cholecystitis or gallbladder disease with that? Or is this just sort of an observation?
No, that's just what I've observed. As we've taken reports from patients, we'll ask, you know, what about your gallbladder? Have you been diagnosed with diabetes? What about symptoms of low blood sugar, the cravings for sugar or cravings for alcohol? And that's where we've seen it. And yeah, I finally checked the stats for the state of Utah where they've had a high use of these drugs. And they have a high diabetic rate anyway, but so there's a pretty good increase in diabetes. But I checked for the year after the stats came in, after the first year after Prozac was on the market, and it went from about a 45-degree increase to that line just shot straight in the air after that first year that Prozac was out. I couldn't believe the increase.
In other words, it's just a definite increase in, this is type 2 diabetes you're speaking of.
Right.
So the predisposed...
Of course, we don't know what it's doing to the offspring. Well, I mean, it will be interesting years down the road to find out how many of the offspring of these people are ending up with type 1 diabetes.
Well, now, is there any problem, or are there any restrictions as far as giving the serum serotonin reabsorption inhibitors, SSRI drugs, to pregnant women?
Nope, not really. I see La Leche League pushing the drugs to pregnant and nursing women. I mean, now they deal mainly with nursing women, but there has been a real push to get pregnant women on these drugs of late. They're even talking about screening pregnant women for depression.
Well, now, what about then? What about the child? Is there any studies that show that there are no effect on the child?
There are huge numbers of lawsuits being filed for the horrible birth defects. Many children are being born with heart defects where they have to have open heart surgery right away. And they end up on medication for life, cutting their lives very short. There are children being born with their organs outside the body.
But, of course, what they're going to say is, well, this happens anyway. Is there any
they
statistics?
They always say that.
Of course they would. But is there any statistics that show there's an increase in birth defects if you're taking this?
Yes, that's why they're winning. That's why the suits are being filed.
No, we certainly haven't heard about this at all, you know. And I try to keep my ear pretty well to the ground so I know what's going on out there. So the cases are actually being settled on this, and we're not hearing about it in the major media?
I know. Well, they bring in like $200 million a day on antidepressants. Why would they want you to... When I did the Lisa Gibbons show a few years ago on mothers killing their children, we were told we could say antidepressant. We could not say the names of the drugs because of their advertisers. Go to drugawareness.org.
Okay, fine.
You can keep up.
Drugawareness.org. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Could this really be true? I fear that it is. Well, Dr. Stan, back here, our guest is Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, and we're talking about the effects of the serotonin inhibitors, the serum SSRI, serum serotonin reabsorption inhibitors. And so if you inhibit the reabsorption of serotonin, then the serotonin stays and you get higher and higher levels. And this has the impact on people. Now, I know that some people, you know, and I've talked to them, have been on the SSRI drugs. They were depressed, and they don't feel depressed anymore. Have you talked to some people who actually believe that they benefited from the SSRI drugs?
Oh, yeah. All the time. But once I start asking them questions, they find that they've had all kinds of reactions that they had no clue were related to the drug.
What sort of reactions would they have? Would you be speaking of?
Oh, for instance, I can think of someone. I went in to have a haircut, and the fellow that was cutting my hair, I started talking to him about some of these things, and he said, well, I was on one of these drugs for a while, and I didn't have any side effects. I got off, and I'm fine. And I said, really? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, what about your memory? Because that's one of the most common things, is memory loss. And he said, well, wow, my memory got really bad. Is that related to the drug? And then I said, what about cravings for sugar or NutraSweet? And he said, I was drinking Diet Pop like I couldn't believe how much I was drinking. And he said, that was related to the drug? You know, so we just kind of went on and on with those different things. I was telling someone this morning about the first radio show that I ever, one of the very first ones that I ever did. I had a lady call me afterwards, and she was just as mad as she could be. But how dare you say anything about Prozac? That's when that one was the only one that was out. And she said, I don't know how I could live without that drug. It saved my life, and on and on and on and on. She told me that she'd been on it about 4 years. And I thought, uh-oh, this lady's in trouble. You're not on it for 4 years without really having some problems. And I thought, just let her talk. So I did. And for about 30 minutes, she told me how she and her husband were very, very religious.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a minute, Ann. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Ann Blake Tracy, who is, of course, a PhD and has written extensively about the danger of these drugs. In fact, her book, Prozac, Panacea, or Plague, and we don't carry it. I think maybe we should, because it sounds to me like a very important book. But she was talking to this one woman who was really just furious that she had been critical of Prozac. This woman talked to her for 30 minutes about how wonderful this had been, how much it had helped her. And so go ahead with that story, Dr. Blake.
Okay. She laid a background of a very religious couple, very upstanding in the community. They had hoped and prayed for a child. Finally, 8 years into their marriage, they had this beautiful little girl, and their whole lives were just centered around this little girl. So that was the background she laid over that amount of time, and told me quite a bit about them. And then, just out of the blue, she finally said, well, you know, it does really bother me that I started shoplifting and I just can't stop, and I've got my 10-year-old daughter helping me. And you could hear, she said, and I don't know what to do. I was at the grocery store the other day, and I was trying to put the grocery cart in the trunk of my car. Like, you know, how stupid is that? Is the way she was saying it. And she said, a fellow just came up and took the cart from me and said, I'm sorry, but you can't do that. And she said it so disappointed, like, can't anyone see how bad I am? Can't they help? You know, like, she wanted somebody to help, but she didn't know how to admit how bad she was. And you could hear the little girl in the background saying, Mommy, shh, Mommy, shh. Because the poor little kids almost have to become a parent to their parents who are having so many problems.
And it really just changes their whole function of the brain. So she was a become a kleptomaniac. What was she taking? She was taking Prozac at the time?
Well, that's one of the manias. That's just it. We have dipsomania, which is drinking alcohol, craving alcohol. There's pyromania, where they start fires. Remember, I said arson is a symptom of high serotonin levels. You got the kleptomania, where they steal. Just constantly had a woman in Seattle on one of these that embezzled $3.4 million from Starbucks. She spent every penny of it, went out, bought like 40 cars and bought all kinds of stuff. She just had it stacked in her house. There was this little path, all these boxes just stacked from floor to ceiling, little path through her house. She never used them. She bought everything. But, you know, that's common. But what was really sad in this case was the woman, after she shooed her daughter out of the room and you heard the door shut, she then cupped her hand over the phone like this and said, isn't it terrible? I don't want her anymore.
Well, I'm sure that this really
does. She was doing really good on her drugs.
Well, we're going to talk to Mike from Santa Cruz, and our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question, go ahead, Mike. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, a question. I'd like to thank Dr. Tracy for her book, which I read a number of years ago. And on page 319, she discusses briefly Dr. Cameron and Alan Dulles, CIA. I wonder if she could elaborate a little further on their interest. You describe it, inhuman torturous research into mind control.
Okay.
Would you mind going into that a bit?
Dr. Tracy?
No, I don't mind.
Go ahead.
It's really kind of scary to look at when you look at all the different mind control projects, and Dr. Cameron was a monster, by the way. But when you look at the
Was that Hewitt Cameron? Was he the Canadian or what?
Yes.
All right, fine. He was the one who did experiments in Canada.
He
did those terrible experiments, and working for the CIA, for the Central Intelligence Agency, and destroyed people's minds. There was Journey into Darkness, I think, is a book somebody had written who'd been one of his victims. But, of course, these were all government experiments. But go ahead, Dr. Tracy. I think that's so important people understand
terrible.
That government experiments to find out how terrible these things were, and then now they're prescribing them for all people.
Exactly. I know I was telling someone this morning, all you have to do is make a visit to Dachau or Auschwitz to know exactly what was going on. They were medical experimental labs, and we have them here in this country all over, everywhere. We just pay people to go and offer them free drugs if they'll come in. we don't call them Dachau or Auschwitz. We should. But anyway, what most people don't know is that the CIA took 80% of their initial budget when they were first organized, put it in a brown paper bag, sent two agents to Switzerland to buy up all of the LSD that Sandoz Pharmaceutical had. Sandoz was growing LSD from ergot fungus. So when they got there, the supply was not very large. So they were really disappointed that there were only a couple ounces or so. And they grabbed their brown paper bag and headed back to America, straight to Eli Lilly, the makers of Prozac. And they told Lilly that they needed LSD in a synthetic form in order to use it for a mind control agent. Lilly sent them a memo saying that they could deliver it by the truckload. And then began the experimentation by the CIA on unsuspecting members of the public who had, you know, just had no clue.
Now, do these SSRI drugs work something like
very much
like LSD does? Is LSD raises serotonin levels?
Yes, it does. Okay. That's how it produces its effects. That's how PCP produces its effects, is by increasing serotonin.
See, most people don't understand the relationship. They don't understand the relationship between these, you know, the LSD and PCP. And so many people are putting their children on Ritalin because doctors say it's good and the school nurses say
it's good. Have no idea. It's like meth.
Right. It works through the same pathways as methamphetamine.
Right.
And
your chemical name is methylphenidate.
Right.
How hard is that to figure out?
Well, you see, nobody's talking. In fact, we've been trying to get Dr. Peter Bregan on here to talk about Ritalin. But let's stick with the Prozac, because that's your field. And how long has your book been out now at the present time?
The first edition came out in 1994.
You've been at this for a long time. You've been at it for at least 13 years.
And when I started, I thought it would take a year, maybe two, to turn it around. I thought surely people would wake up, because it's so simple to understand when you look at the science. But Dr. Candace Kurt, one of the two discoverers of the serotonin binding process that made all of this possible, came out against them a decade ago, calling them monsters, that she's alarmed she ever had anything to do with their development. And she's not just anybody. She headed the brain chemistry department at the National Institute of Health for 13 years. And we have totally ignored her.
And is she still speaking out against this?
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, maybe off the air I can get her telephone number from you and we can get her on, too, because I'd like to get the four-tape set, which is what we do with these things, so that people can really hear various views about that. Well, anything else you want to say, Mike, before we let you go?
I want to ask if she knew if Ken Kesey was a participant in the CIA mind control experiments or the LSD experimentation.
I don't know.
Ken Kesey, of course, has written a book called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And did Kesey die? I think I had a feeling he had died.
I think he's...
why don't you look that up?
Yeah. Yeah, I just watched the documentary, but it was a 10-year-old documentary. So
why don't you go ahead and check that out and let me know the first week. Okay.
The story is given by Thomas Wolfe Jr. in the book Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, which I unfortunately read back in the late 60s. But anyhow, he talks about participating, I believe, where he was attending college. He participated in a program where they were giving experimental drugs and took off from there. I just wondered what else they might have done to spur him on that might not have been in the book. Part of my interest in Dr. Cameron was simply that I think the listeners should know that this was the head of the American Psychiatric Association for a time.
Amen to that.
That's where they're coming from.
Right. Thanks so
much,
Mike.
Thanks,
bye-bye. Let's go to Rick from Texas. Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
Hi, fine. I wanted to ask what the active ingredient in the SSRI is.
What is the active ingredient in the SSRI? Do we know?
Well, we know that the active ingredient in Prozac is fluoride.
That's what I thought, fluoride. How much is it? The average capsule, I mean, per dose.
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look, but it's fluoxetine hydrochloride. So,
and of course, that's what, remember, they're putting the fluoride in our drinking water all across the country because they're really so concerned about children's teeth.
Right.
Does it collect in your bones?
Yeah, sure it does.
Yes, it does.
Does it also collect in your brain or not?
Yeah, in your pineal gland.
Yes, it
we
does.
Know. Yep. Yep. We got a real problem, Rick, and people think anybody who talks like this has got to be crazy. Well, the trouble is, I'm afraid we're not. These are real problems, and we haven't talked to Dr. Tracy for some time, and I appreciate so much her sending me an email and encouraging me to have her on again. Anything else you'd like to say?
Well, I got at least 3 family members on these things. And
well, get them off.
I'm trying to.
All right, fine. Well, you know, get
make sure you get them off the right way.
And in fact, how could people get hold of your book, Dr. Tracy? In fact, we would really like to probably carry your book, and I will be calling you afterwards and find out how to get it. But how do you have a website people can go to?
TheDrugAwareness.org. DrugAwareness.org.
DrugAwareness.org.
Or you can call 800-280-0730.
Did you get that?
280-0730.
Okay, Rick.
Okay, thanks. It's
but because you get a copy of a tape of our program, and if you get them just to listen to the tape, maybe, who knows, maybe they might even start listening on a regular basis.
Yeah, well, I got another one of my family members listening to you, so that's good.
Okay, God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Ed calling from Utica. Hi. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Hello, Dr. Stan. Enjoy your program. This is a very important program for me, I believe. I have a son that is in the psychiatric center, and he's on Zyprexol, and I don't know what the dangers are of that.
Do you know anything about that specific drug, Dr. Tracy?
Axel?
No. What is the drug again, Ed?
Zyprexol.
Zyprexol.
Oh, Zyprexa? Jeez. Yeah, they're ending up in a lot of trouble right now for causing so much diabetes.
Oh, yeah.
How old is your son?
He's in his late 40s.
And
is he manic, or what is he? Is he schizophrenic or what? Depressed?
Well, they consider him that, but I don't really see where they come up with this.
What do they call him specifically?
Well, they call him schizophrenic, paranoid schizophrenic, but I don't think he is.
Did he take antidepressants?
He is not taking anything other than that. He's forced to take this.
But before, was he on Prozac or Luvax or?
No, he was not.
He was not, huh?
He was not. Did he use street drugs?
No.
Or did he have? Was he exposed to chemicals in his job or anything? Was he a painter, maybe, or?
I don't see where there's a problem in that area.
No, because Dr. Tracy's looking for some sort of a toxicity that precipitated the schizophrenia.
I would ask is if there's any blood sugar problems in the family, if there's any diabetes or alcoholism that would indicate low blood sugar.
Well, he is not. He doesn't drink alcohol. He's not on drugs.
Is anyone else in the family?
Pardon me?
Anyone else in the family line that would indicate a weak pancreas running through the line?
I don't think so.
Anyone else in the family have psychiatric problems? Because that sometimes there is genetic tendency towards schizophrenia.
Well, there is maybe a touch of that in the extended family. We don't think, though, that he really has what they're telling him.
Well, I've really can't comment, from a distance,
Right.
I sympathize with you. I really wouldn't know what to tell you, all the way back there in Utica, New York.
Yeah. Have you seen Dr. Stan? Have you seen, I included a study in my book that's an edition, this last 2001 edition, where they said, well, we've known for decades that all mental illness is blood sugar related. I know as I continued to read the studies, I kept going, they're talking about blood sugar all the way through here. Finally, I ran across that study where they just, well, by the way, we've always known. Have you ever noticed that before?
No, I really haven't. In fact, I really need to get a copy of your book.
The brain does not function without normal right. blood sugar levels.
I'm sure it doesn't, and certainly it has to have, proper nutrition. Proper nutrition is the key to
right.
so much of what's going on.
Ed,
you could always give me a call off the air, and I could give you some other suggestions. But anyway, God bless. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Bye-bye. Dr. Stan, Dr. Tracy.
Well, we'll be back. Our guest has been Ann Blake Tracy, and we're going to we'll be back in just a moment here. We have one more caller. Hi, Jack. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. You in the past mentioned Dr. David Graham of the FDA stating, I think, in a congressional testimony that the FDA cannot be trusted to fulfill its prescribed duties. And then,
I don't know if that was the exact terminology that he used, but Dr. David Graham actually testified before the Senate on Vioxx, and he was in charge of determining its safety. And if people go up to my webpage, they can actually go back and they can find Dr. David Graham's complete testimony before the investigating committee of the Senate, where he just talked about how when he tried to bring out the fact that Vioxx was not safe, that at least 60,000 Americans would die from this, how he was, of course, treated by the people, his superiors at the FDA, and, of course, now, of course, Merck has agreed to settle the Vioxx claims for $4.5 trillion, something like that. Pardon me, $4.5 billion. But you're absolutely right that Dr. Graham did refer to the fact that, certainly, that the people at the FDA seem to have a different agenda. So go right ahead.
Are you both sitting down?
Right.
You ready for this one?
Go ahead.
I just got the stats showing that Viagra is causing heart attacks at 5 times the rate of Vioxx.
Well, that will certainly a lot of fellows will be happy to hear that. Anyway, anything else, Jack?
What a way to go, huh?
Simply asking Dr. Tracy if Candace Peirce, if she's testified to Congress, and this would be in the congressional record, I presume.
Who are you speaking of?
I don't believe Candace Peirce has when it comes to antidepressants.
Well, now, who is Candace Peirce?
She was one of the two discoverers of the serotonin binding process.
All right, fine. She's the woman you were speaking of earlier. Okay, Jack, we will try to get Candace onto our program.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, and thanks so much. That was Jack calling from Michigan, and, of course, our guest this evening, Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, who's been at this, standing, on the wall trying to say, don't you know what you're doing with Prozac? And of course, most people don't know what they're doing with Prozac. The doctors like it because the patients, a lot of them will feel better, but what happens down the line for the patient who continues taking Prozac over a long period of time, and nobody asked that question. Dr. Tracy, I'm going to call you back and get you onto some of my other programs, and really appreciate your courage in what you do.
Well, thank you. You want one parting statement about these dangers? Male fish are being born with ovaries because of the huge amount of antidepressants in the water supply.
I mean, the fish are being...
Male fish are being born with ovaries.
Because of the antidepressants in the water supply.
Right.
Well, I'm sure that it's having a terrible effect, and of course, my work, much of it is, deals with population control. There really is an agenda to do harm to the people, and we can't depend upon the CDC, the NIH, or the FDA to protect us. God bless you, Dr. Tracy. I'm going to give you. Will you be around tomorrow?
I will.
I'll give you a call, and we'll arrange some other programs. Thanks so very much. Bye bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. That was Dr. Ann Blake Tracy, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with her, talking about the dangers of Prozac. And we've talked to her in years past, and we've, of course, did a lot of programs on Ritalin in the past, and certainly hadn't been able to get hold of Dr. Peter Bregan, who's our consultant on that. I just talked to his office the other day. Hope we can get him on, and hope we can get more in the way of interviews with Dr. Tracy and Blake Tracy, because you have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, you are responsible for your health. Nobody else can be made responsible, and the doctors are not allowed to hear programs like you've heard tonight. Well, we do know that there's tremendous increase in the incidence of homicidal activity. In fact, most of these multiple killers, whether it would be the boys at Columbine, I know we know one of them was on Luvox, which is a kissing cousin to Prozac, a serum serotonin inhibitor, and they won't tell us whether the other boy was on them as well. But they have these ideologies of committing these terrible homicidal deeds, and this is well known to be associated with these medications. It doesn't matter if 90% of the people feel better. If 10% or 5% or 2% are going to be suicidal or homicidal, they're just not safe to turn loose on the population. Unless, of course, you want school shootings, you want this sort of thing. And I'd like to suggest you know a better way to destroy a nation, and oh my goodness, we've got to take the guns away from everybody because somebody on Luvox or Prozac went out and shot some people. We have a real problem in our society because we have people who look at the world entirely differently. Certainly, if you have a 4-tape set on Ritalin, if you'd like to get it, we have a 4-tape set on Project Monarch, the CIA mind control programs. It's really very, very fascinating. We certainly have books, one by Jim Keith, who died under very mysterious circumstances, a book called Mass Control, another one called Mind Control. We have a 4-tape set on mind control, interviews with Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien, and they were the ones who introduced me to Hugh and Cameron. I've never met him personally. He's passed away and gone to his just reward. But Hugh and Cameron was the head of the American Psychiatric Association, who did a number of experiments in Canada on people who just come into his office with depression and put them in the hospital and give them multiple electric shocks under a contract from the CIA just to see what would happen, and destroyed the minds of people who have no memory of anything at all. Experiments, and eventually, of course, when the information came out why some of the people were able to get settlements from the Canadian government, the book Journey into Madness goes... Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay. And and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, this next hour, they're going to be the views of Arlene Kula, who's the president of the California chapter of the Eagle Forum, and certainly she has been the leader of the Eagle Forum up there in Santa Rosa for a long time, and other organizations, property rights organizations as well. But this evening we're going to be talking about the identification card, that the government wants everybody to carry, because this is how we're going to actually identify Osama bin Laden. He's not going to have a government-issued credit card, you'll probably be able to recognize him by the fact that he's wearing a turban, he's 6'5", he's got a straggly beard, and of course, we're going to stop Osama bin Laden from sneaking into our country and going into Starbucks, because every American citizen is going to have to carry one of these cards. And there was a law passed back in 2005 that every American would have to carry an identification card. It would be your state-issued driver's license, but it would actually have to conform to the requirements of the federal government. And, of course, it'll have an RFID chip in it. It'll have all sorts of identification material. It will link to the government computers. It will know everything about you. And that's exactly what they want. And so with us today, of course, is Arlene Kula. And Arlene, certainly these ideas sort of go along with the ideas of Robert Pastor, don't they? Would you like to tell our listeners just a little bit about Robert Pastor and what he wants and who he is and why what he said was so important or what he wrote is so important?
Sure. By the way, thank you for having me on your program again. Robert Pastor was the author of a document put out by the Council on Foreign Relations as well, which he belongs to, called Towards a North American Community. And he is being called the father of the North American Union. He's all for the idea of having a union with Canada, Mexico, and the United States all together, just as similar to the European Union. And in there, he states that there needs to be shared information of identification between the three countries, and he wants this ID to be with biometric identifiers. So the Real ID Act of 2005 is exactly what he's asking for.
And that includes biometric sending of information, doesn't it?
Yes, and what is so interesting, when they first began talking about it, they said that it would be shared with Mexico and Canada. Then there was a big uproar, so they said, no, that won't happen anymore. Well, I found the most amazing information just this afternoon from Washington, the state of Washington, that has been designated as the pilot state to implement the Real ID. The governor of the state is very proud of it. And you go on their website information, and here it states, one of the purposes is to offer state motor vehicle agencies the ability to link driver's license databases between the U.S. states, Canada, and Mexico, as proposed by the sweeping Real ID Act approved by Congress this month.
And, of course, the average person doesn't understand what this is all about. They want dossiers on everybody. And, of course, once you have your federal ID card, it'll be issued by the states, but it'll be a federal ID card. Then they can immediately link the information on that to the national database, where they will know everything about you. And they're collecting this information now every time you use your credit card, every time you use your grocery store card, every time, suddenly you answer a questionnaire for the government or for school, or all that information is being compiled. They want a dossier on you, because you might be a terrorist. Well, you go right ahead, Arlene.
The other interesting thing is people are saying, oh, well, they would not use RFID chips. In fact, the federal government website says that that will be up, left to the discretion of the states. That's not being mandatory. But this is also what the state of Washington says. The license also will have a radio frequency identification chip, RFID, required by the federal government to facilitate rapid identification checks at border crossings. So obviously someone is not telling us the truth, and these, I think any state that is finally agreeing to be compliant on this will have figured out this is really what the government wants. Why don't we go ahead and put those on now, because they need all this, these various points of identification. It would be so much easier to put it on this little chip, because later on it's going to be required anyway. And so that's really what it's all about. And these RFID chips are capable of holding as much information as the Encyclopedia Britannica, so they could have everything about you, your, of course, religion, your political persuasion, your medical information, and they could add information to this that you're not even aware of. They could label you a terrorist. They could label you whatever they want to do, because you have no access to the information they're putting on there. So it is pretty scary.
Well, I think it's important that people understand that the definition of a terrorist, according to the Patriot Act, was anybody who wants to change our form of government. Now, there are a lot of us, of course, who are very, very concerned that we're moving towards a dictatorship. And those people who don't want to go along with the dictatorship, those people who object to this idea of the North American Union, where the sovereignty of our nation is destroyed, could be considered to be terrorists by their definition. Whereas, of course, if you really stop and think of it, what is the law of our land? It's the United States Constitution, which the president and the members of the executive branch of government and certainly the members of our federal and state legislatures, they've all sworn to uphold the Constitution and to defend it against all enemies, foreign and domestic. The difficulty is that many of these people are actually globalists. They don't believe in America. And by the definition of the Patriot Act, they are the terrorists. But of course, when they hold the reins of government, when they have the police power, they can level anybody who doesn't want to go along with their effort to destroy the sovereignty of our nation. They can label them as terrorists. And understand, ladies and gentlemen, that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. And most people don't even know the battle's there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Arlene Kohler. We're talking about this national ID card that they want everybody to have, just as they had it in Hitler's Germany. In fact, Orlean has a wonderful video quotation from one of the men who was instrumental in drawing up this idea. Would you like to give that quotation again, Orlean?
From Robert Pastor?
I was thinking the one from Primakov. Do we have any really... Is that written up someplace?
Yes, where he says that the creation of the European Union is creating the European
Union?
He said that by creating the European Union, they were creating a European
Soviet. You're talking about Gorbachev.
Yes.
The Gorbachev had said that certainly the European Union is a Soviet. And of course, basically what he's talking about is the principles of the European Union are exactly those of communism. You have a ruling elite, and of course the people have nothing to say about what goes on. We've interviewed a member of the European Parliament. When they allowed to speak, which is very, very rarely, they're only given 1 minute. They don't make any of the decisions. Everything they do is simply to rubber stamp the decisions that are made by the massive bureaucracy that is an appointed bureaucracy. And the people of Europe are losing their freedom, they're losing the value of their currency, they're losing the sovereignty of their countries, and the people of Europe, many of them are furious with what's going on. But what do you do when you have no voice? And when this European Union is being imposed on you, and if you vote against it, well, they impose it anyway, because, of course, the elite have always wanted to unite Europe, and now North America, and then South America, and Africa, and Asia, and the Arab countries, and then they can mold them all together into this one world government. But you had another quotation I believe it was from a man named Primakov, who had something to do with the establishment of...
Oh, yes. You know, most people don't understand with this Real ID Act. They think that it's a United States Act that was created by our own Congress people. But according to information that I have received from John Spring, who is a radio show host in Southern California, and he says it comes from a book called The New Underworld Order by Christopher Story, who is a British author, that it was really, it's spelled Yevgeny, anyway, the last name is Primakov, and he was a former KGB Russian, and he was brought over along with another person from East Germany who was part of Stasi, which is the East German equivalent to the KGB. They were brought over to write the National Identity Card Act, which then later became known as the Real ID Act of 2005. And Primakov wrote this following statement. He said that when this is all completed and all the other items of repressive legislation, such as the Patriot Act, have been completed, then we will have acquired here in the United States, the executive branch of the U.S. government will have acquired greater control over the American people than the Kremlin could exert over the Russian people when Stalin was alive.
Well, I don't doubt that that is very true. I don't know, you know, because I don't necessarily trust Christopher Story anywhere further than I can throw him. I've met him and I've followed him for many years, and so I'm always take everything he says with a grain of salt. But the fact that this will give people the government control over our lives, there's no question at all. And I would simply point out that they're collecting dossiers on every American citizen. And they want to track us. Why do you think that they have all of these video cameras going up all across America? I mean, certainly in England today, they have over 5 million video cameras. Every Englishman is they have pictures of them at least 30 times a day by the video cameras. Video cameras everywhere in England, and we're going exactly the same way here because we want, of course, be able to identify Osama bin Laden before he gets in one of the Starbucks restaurants. You know, no, this has nothing to do with terrorism, ladies and gentlemen. They have to have a justification, but the real objective and goal is to be able to monitor and control and intimidate the American people. When you understand that, of course, so much of what's going on today really does begin to make sense. Well, our telephone number is, of course, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Orlean, you've been working very hard to try to expose this Real ID Act, this Real ID Act of 2005. The media has been playing it down, or sort of saying, well, you know how wonderful it is. Oh my goodness, now if all the legal American citizens and legal residents of the United States have an ID card, then we can identify the illegal immigrants. You see, it's going to help us to stop illegal immigration because they won't have these cards. But, ladies and gentlemen, they've got all the laws on the books right now they need to stop illegal immigration. They refuse to stop it, and if they can get us to accept these ID cards, these federal ID cards, they're still not going to try to stop illegal immigration. When you understand that they've created the problem so they can get the solution that they want, and the solution is not to stop illegal immigration, but simply to take away more freedom from the American people, and everybody will have to carry one of these cards, and they're threatening us now. You won't be able to get into a federal building. You won't be able to fly on the airlines, and who knows, maybe they'll even take away your ability to get onto the trains down the line. And Chertoff, Michael Chertoff, who's certainly one of the most evil men in America, heads the Office of Homeland Security, is threatening the people, is threatening the states if they don't go along with the dictates of the rulers in Washington. Go ahead and pick up the story there, Arlene.
All right. Originally, when the states began to find out how much this was going to cost them, about $11 billion, and all of the regulations that would be imposed upon them, coming from the federal government, they began to say, no, we're just not going to go along with this. So I think 6 states have come up with legislation saying we refuse to implement the Real ID Act. So then Michael Chertoff from the Department of Homeland Security, the federal government started to back down a little. They said, it's okay, you can have a longer time to implement it. We'll wait till 2009, and then they were saying, no, we'll even wait till 2013. Well, January 11th, Michael Chertoff issued a press release where he said, I'm sorry, but we've decided we just have to bite the bullet right now. We're not going to wait any longer. He said, there comes a point in time where all the discussion and analysis has to stop. We are now 6 years away from 9/11. Simply kicking this problem further down the road is a time-tested Washington way of smothering a proposal with process. The time has come to bite the bullet. We're running out of time. But he doesn't say why they're running out of time. Well, the reason is they would like to implement the North American Union by the year 2010, and the Real ID Act is a very vital part of that. They have to have total identification for all people inside Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And so that's why they're running out of time. And so he then said, if your state doesn't comply by May 11th, you're not willing to sign a statement that you will comply with the Real ID Act, then from then on, your citizens of your state will not be able to fly on any airplane, nor will you be able to enter any federal building. But you can use an alternative form of ID, like a passport. So some people who think, well, that won't be so bad, I'll just apply for a passport. The post office is a federal building, and you will not be able to go into the post office to apply for the passport if your state is not in compliance with this. So it's really a big bully tactics that are just amazing what they're doing, and that's even intimidating more states. In fact, the governor of Montana just recently, I think last week, issued a statement to other governors saying, please join me in protesting this and refuse to sign the Real ID Act or say that you're going to go along with it. So it's creating a very interesting scenario, and what we're asking is for members of states across the nation to please contact their state legislators, ask them to do something similar, to come up with their own bill. And they refuse to go along with this Real ID Act of 2005, and then also contact your congresspeople and ask them to rescind this act, that this is just outrageous and the desire to take away our liberties as well as state sovereignty rights.
I think the people have to understand that where did the federal government get the authorization to do this? They don't have the authorization. But everything is to be from the top down. Everything is going to be from Washington, D.C. They're going to control everything. And they're threatening the states. They're threatening the people. And, of course, they can always threaten to withhold funds from the states. But they can certainly threaten that American citizens will not be allowed to fly on airplanes if you don't have this card. You will not be able to, you know, to go into a federal building if you don't have this card. They're going to do everything they can to force us to go along. And if we go along, just like, of course, the cattle that are being herded into these chutes just before they take them down to be executed, that's exactly what this is about. When you understand there is a plan for a police state in America, there are people who have a different worldview. The reason for this whole idea of a war on terrorism was to get the American people to give up their freedom. And those of you who have never, of course, heard the explanation that was given from Condoleezza Rice. And I'll give that when we get back here, because I think it's so important. Condoleezza Rice was asked at the 9/11 Commission hearings why, when they knew that an attack was coming, that they didn't do anything to try to stop a terrorist attack on America. You'll be amazed at what Condoleezza Rice said. You can find it, of course, in a book called Without President by Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton, the chairman and the co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission. Of course, they're both members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and Lee Hamilton for many years was of course a member of the Trilateral Commission, one of the ruling elite of America. But certainly this is on page 181 of their book, entitled Without Precedent, and it is without precedent. We're losing our freedom here in America. Well, when we get back, Orlean, I really want to read what Condoleezza Rice, when she said when she was asked, you know, why, of course, it was that nothing was done to stop the 9/11 attack. But I want to do that when all of our stations are back with us.
Okay.
So, all right. So basically, you've been in the pretty doing everything you could to get the information out. Tell us a little bit about what happened when you went back to, was it St. Louis here recently?
Yes, I was able to meet one of the people I've been quoting in this article that I've been writing about the Real ID Act. His name is Sam Rohrer. He's a representative from Pennsylvania, and he has come out with a strong letter to all of his fellow legislators asking for them to go along with the bill that Pennsylvania has against this. And it was almost like it was an answer to prayer to find him in this room with 200 people. I was seated next to him, and it was just exciting. I said, "Oh, are you Sam Rohrer from Pennsylvania?" And he said, "Yes." I said, "I've been quoting you in my article." And then I met five other state legislators from Oklahoma who have a similar legislation against the Real ID Act, and a man, a senator, who has come up with legislation to stop the NAFTA superhighway from being built across Oklahoma. So isn't that interesting? It'll go to the end of Texas and won't be able to go any farther. So that was kind of exciting. In fact, we're going to bring him to be a speaker at our Eagle Forum conference March 29th, where Dr. Stan will also be speaking. And it would be nice if people could attend that conference. You'll be able to hear lots of wonderful speakers talking about protecting American sovereignty.
Well, of course, I suspect that the federal government will put so much pressure on the state of Oklahoma that, or bribe them in one way or another, or simply, bring in their intelligence agencies and replace those legislatures who voted against the highway, because that highway is a very important part of their plan to unite the three nations together. So I commend the people in Oklahoma for having the courage to do something, but you have to understand that the people we're dealing with at the national level, the people who want to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, are really very wicked people, and they won't stop at anything. And certainly we've seen the pattern of assassination, character assassination, or frank assassination that's been used in this country and throughout the world to be used against anybody who has the audacity to stand against their plans for the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Have they had any repercussions yet by passing this legislation to keep the NAFTA superhighway from going through Oklahoma?
I'm sure they have a little bit. One of the other things they're trying to do is get Oklahoma to drop out of NASCO. NASCO is the group that's behind building this superhighway, and it's just wonderful that they are having the success they're having when the rest of the nation doesn't even want to talk about it. As you know, Ron Paul was asked about the NAFTA superhighway in the debates, and because he answered them, he was poo-pooed and ridiculed, and Newsweek wrote an article about it, how silly it was. And so, you know, they're just trying. It's what's so interesting. It was the same tactics that went on before the European Union was declared. They called it a European community, and anyone that even thought of it someday being a union or even made such a public notification about it, they were ridiculed.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with Orlean Kulin. Well, yeah, this is Dr. Stan, and I was talking before we went to the break about why it was the government didn't do anything. They knew the attack was coming. How do we know that? Well, of course, if you read the directive that from the FBI that was given to President Bush, why they talked about the attack coming and that they were thinking about using planes. We know that they knew because we have, and anybody who wants to see it, we'll be glad to provide it for you. On the very 11th of September 2001, we pulled down off the internet, one of our friends did, a copy of an article that appeared on the Northwest Airlines airline hostess's website. And it was written by Bill Gertz, who's a correspondent for the Washington Times. It talked about something called Operation Bojanka. And Operation Bojanka said that the terrorists were planning on attacking America, that they were going to use airplanes, and the targets were The Sears building in Chicago, the Transamerica building in San Francisco, the White House, the Pentagon, the CIA headquarters at Langley, and the World Trade Center. They knew the attack was coming. Bill Gates got his information from the CIA. We know that, actually, according to Sybil Edmonds, and you can check this out on the Internet, Sybil Edmonds, translator for the FBI, has revealed that said the people had come to the FBI 3 months before the attack and told them about the coming attack and the use of airplanes. We know that one of the hijackers had actually defected to the FBI in April of the year 2000. We have that from the first investigation, the Joint Senate House Intelligence Committee report. And this hijacker, who'd been trained in Pakistan for the attack, he decided he didn't want to be a suicide bomber, and so he went to the FBI a year and a half before the attack. They knew the attack was coming. So basically, let me quote to you from page 181 of the book written by Thomas Keene and Lee Hamilton. And I quote, Jamie Gorelick pressed the issue as to why the Bush administration had not held senior-level meetings on counterterrorism before September 2001, and why more had not been done to take defensive measures in response to the threat reporting over the spring and summer. Now, of course, she's talking to Condoleezza Rice, who's being interviewed at the time. And I'm quoting again, Rice pointed out that the nation simply wasn't prepared to take dramatic action against Al-Qaeda before 9/11, either abroad or in reforming government here at home, and said, until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that kind of change. Let me repeat what she said. This is a quotation. You'll find it on page 181 of the book Without Precedent, written by the chairman and co-chairman of the 9/11 Commission. And I've gone back and I've actually checked the transcript of the statement made by Condoleezza Rice, and this is accurate. This is what she said. Until there is a catastrophic event that forces people to think differently, that forces people to overcome all customs and old culture and old fears about domestic intelligence, you don't get that kind of change. Well, of course, what they wanted was to change our attitude. And they're using the threat of terrorism to get us to give up our freedoms. And, of course, to renounce our constitutional right of privacy. And they want us all to carry an ID card. They want to track us with video cameras. If you have a cell phone, they can listen to what you say when the cell phone is turned off. Did you know that? The new cell phones have little microphones in them that you don't have to have the cell phone turned on. If you have it in the house, they can listen to you. They can track where you are even if the cell phone is turned off. That's why they want everybody to get a cell phone, so they can track you. Why would you do that? I thought this was all about terrorism. No, ladies and gentlemen, it's all about an authoritarian society, a dictatorship, and a proletariat, an elite who will control us all from the cradle to the grave, at least those who are felt worthy to survive the coming turmoil and period of chaos and crisis that lies ahead. People say, well, I don't have anything to worry about. I mean, so what if they're monitoring me? I'm not a terrorist. But you see, you may very well be a terrorist if you object to the loss of our freedom or to the fact that they're sending our boys overseas to fight in another no-win war, that a third of them, of the million or so that have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan, a third of them are ill within 3 months because of the experiments that they've carried out on them. And if you doubt that they carry out experiments on our citizens, we have a report. We call it the Rockefeller Committee Report, and it's available. Came out in 1994 from the Veterans Administration over the signature of Jay Rockefeller, saying that they've experimented without the knowledge of over hundreds of thousands of American troops. Well, go right ahead, Orlean, and pick the story from there.
Oh, you always have so much information to pass on to us, don't you? It's amazing. Well, I think I was telling them about the similarity between what they're doing, moving us towards the North American Union and using this Real ID Act to what has gone on in Europe, forming the European Union. My husband is from Germany, and so we were living there in the 1970s and saw firsthand what was happening, moving us that direction. My husband had been trained at Harvard and Tufts University, where he got his first two master's degrees in international law and diplomacy. So he had the liberal mindset and had no idea this was going to be such a disaster for his own country. But now he knows that. He knows what the euro has done to the German mark.
Could you explain that? Because what it's really done is destroyed the value of the savings of the German people. Could you explain what's happened?
Yes, his mother and father set aside 300,000 marks for a life insurance policy for him, and he was checking on it last summer. They did this 15 years ago. Last summer he was checking on it, and the lady told him that it is now worth 100,000 marks. So the euro has devalued the currency by two-thirds. So people who have worked really hard their whole life long there and set aside money so they could have a good pension when they retired, that is now gone. Many of these elderly people are now having to move into public housing and use food stamps, and how humiliating that is for them. Well, that's exactly what's going to happen here. When Germany and these other countries that had stable economies had to bring in 27 There are now 27 other countries that belong to the European Union, most of them third world countries. Of course, that affected everyone's currency. That's what will happen here when we combine with Mexico and Canada. Mexico is a third world country. You can imagine what their economy is like. We're all going to sink to the lowest common denominator. And for those in your audience who don't know, they already have planned the currency. It's called the Amero. A good friend who's a member of Eagles Forum sent away for a sample of what it might look like. They're already designing it, so he gave me a copy of that, and nowhere is there written "In God We Trust" on the coin. It shows a woman who looks like she could be a Mexican goddess sitting on one side of it. It's very sad if that's going to be the kind of currency we're going to have.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest today is Orlene Kula, who's, of course, the president of the Eagle Forum of California. And Orlene was simply talking about what's happened in Europe through the euro. Now, remember that the North American Union that they intend to impose upon us is a prototype of the European Union. And in the European Union, of course, what's happened is they've combined the currency, and they've done away with the German mark, and now they replace it with the euro. And, of course, Orlene's father, pardon me, her husband, is German, and they were over there visiting the family. And the family had put aside a life insurance policy for Orlene's husband for about 300,000 marks. Now, the mark is pretty comparable to the dollars at the present time, a little off. But what's happened was, of course, because of when the mark had merged with the euro, it lost two-thirds of its value. So the policy that he had that was worth 300,000 marks is now worth about 100,000 marks. And you have to understand that this has impoverished a large part of the older population of Germany, because they have having to transfer their wealth to the people in Eastern Europe, and of course Lithuania and Latvia and Estonia, the people who lived simply at a peasant level, and now they're all in the European Union together. And you have to have equality of income. That's what it's all about. And so you have to lower the living standards and lower the value of the savings of the Germans to help the people in Latvia, Lithuania and Estonia and Eastern Germany. And, of course, that's what they intend with the United States when we merge with Mexico. And that's why the ID Act is really so important. This is what Robert Pastor, who's designed this whole thing, has said. They all come from the Council on Foreign Relations. Their loyalty is not to America, but but to the this organization, headquarters at 5080 68th Street in New York City, the Harold Pratt House, the home of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a front group for a secret society that was created in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes to bring about a world government. And if you want to verify that, it's available in a book called Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time by Bill Clinton's mentor, a liberal college professor who taught at Harvard and Princeton before he went to Georgetown University, a professor named Professor Carol Quigley. We carry his book, and it's all right there, the incredible story of how this whole incredible plan, and the fact that the Council on Foreign Relations is a front group for a secret society, and Professor Quigley lets that out. Of course, that's why they tried to suppress his book for so many years, and they made his life miserable, because even though he sympathized with what was going on, he exposed their secret, and that's what they don't want you to know. The Secretary of State always comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. The head of the CIA always comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. The head of the Federal Reserve Board always comes from the Council on Foreign Relations. And most people, prior to 10 years ago, had never heard of the CFR, and yet it's been our invisible government for the better part of 50, almost 60 years now. Well, before we go on, Orlean, I want you, of course, to get your website out, and I want you to tell our listeners about that meeting you're going to have on the 29th of March of this year. So why don't you get your website, and then, of course, tell them about that meeting, all-day meeting up there in the Santa Rosa area of the Eagle Forum, but you're going to have people from...
...about the Real ID Act up there, as well as we'll have a big flyer about our conference. It's March 29th. It'll be at the Doubletree Hotel in Rohnert Park, which is right next to Santa Rosa in beautiful Sonoma County in Northern California. And the conference is from 9 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night. It's called Protect American Sovereignty Conference. We're going to have some outstanding speakers talking about all of the various aspects of our nation that are under attack as we are losing our sovereignty. And we're going to be honoring Dr. Monteith as our radio personality host of the year for all the wonderful things that you do in getting the word out with your broadcast. And he will also be speaking at our conference. Phyllis Schlafly will be there, the founder and national president of Eagle Forum. She was one of the first women who exposed this. Back in 2005, she discovered on a government website the plans for the SPP, the Security Prosperity Partnership, and started writing about it in her Phyllis Schlafly report. Now there are so many other people that are writing about it, and there's a coalition of various groups that are working together to try to stop it. More and more people are calling their congresspeople about it. But as far as I understand, it's still right on track, 2010, because these people consider themselves all-powerful. There's no government oversight, no Congress saying anything about it, no parliament saying anything in Mexico or Canada. It's just the branches of the executive for all three countries that are forming this SPP and the North American Union, and they seem to think that they are unstoppable in the power that they have.
Well, they certainly have the power, and they control the media. Because they control the media, why, you're not going to be reading about this, you know, in the New York Times, or certainly in the Time or Newsweek or U.S. News and World Report. And of course, if you do hear about it at all, it will be to ridicule the idea and to say that this is all just imaginary, it's paranoia. But that's what they did with the European Union. They couldn't let the people of Europe, who wanted to maintain their national sovereignty, they couldn't let them know the truth. So they lied to them at every turn, and they're lying to the American people. Just as they lied about the Gulf of Tonkin and sent 58,000 of our American boys to die in Vietnam for absolutely no purpose at all, other than as a great diversion to take people's attention away from what was going on here in the United States. Just as they lied to get us into the war in Afghanistan, because if we went to war with Afghanistan to capture Osama bin Laden and he escaped, why are we still fighting in Afghanistan? Why, after Osama bin Laden supposedly had escaped into Pakistan, didn't we go into Pakistan to get him if it was worthwhile going to war in one country? And why are we still fighting in Afghanistan today if it was all about Osama bin Laden, or was it? And, of course, why are we fighting in Iraq today? I mean, we got rid of Saddam Hussein. We could have turned the country over to the people and let them work out their own problems, but we don't intend to do that. We intend to keep our troops there indefinitely, but we can't let the American people know that, because you're not smart enough to understand that there is a much larger plan. It's all about a new world order, a new world religion, the destruction of Christianity, and, of course, the new world leader. Well, I think what Orlean is doing is really exciting. It's got, sounds like a great program that's going to be on the 29th of March, and if you'd be interested in going, and I will be speaking, Michael Shaw will be there from Santa Cruz, and he'll be speaking, and they're bringing in people from all over the country. It's going to be a great conference if you'd like to come. Why, of course, once again, why don't you get your telephone number out or your email so that people would know how to get in touch with you?
Okay, I've already received some people writing from the last broadcast this afternoon. They can contact me, and we'll make sure we get a brochure to them. Go to Cal Eagle. That's my personal email address. It stands for California Eagle. So caleagle@svcglobal.net. And I'll make sure that we get a brochure to you.
That's caleagle@svcglobal.net. And it's so vitally important that people keep abreast of what's going on, but understand that behind everything going on today is this other agenda, which, of course, they do not want the American people to know about. Well, people just say, well, of course, but I'm not a terrorist. Why should I be concerned? Why should I object to carrying a national ID card? And the reason you should object is because the federal government has no right, of course, to impose this on it, and because it has nothing to do with terrorism, and is not going to catch Osama bin Laden or any of the terrorists here, and it's certainly not going to be effective in controlling illegal immigration, because they haven't tried to control illegal immigration. In fact, the government steadfastly refuses to enforce the laws that are on the books already. They've steadfastly refused to build the fence they promised to build just before the elections in 2006, and they're supposed to have 700 miles of it finished, and probably there's not more than 170 miles of it, something like that, if there's that much of it finished. And but they say one thing, and then they do another, and then they say, look at that problem. Why, we've got a solution. Everybody's got to carry a national ID card. That's how we're going to control illegal immigration. No, ladies and gentlemen, that's how we're not going to control illegal immigration. We're not going to control it until we have people who believe in America and American sovereignty, whose loyalty is not to this internationalist dream of the New World Order.
When you read the information about all of this, they want open borders.
Right.
That explains why Bush has done nothing to build the fence or to really protect our borders. Part of the whole plan of NAFTA is to have open borders, and then this superhighway, they definitely need open borders to be bringing in all of the cheap goods coming from Mexico on up through the United States to Canada, and bypassing the longshoremen in California that charge over $100,000 a year to unload all of these big containers coming from China. Of course, they don't want to have to pay that, so they're going to bring the containers through the Mexican ports, where they only have to pay $10 an hour for the longshoremen. So part of it is definitely to bring in cheap goods, and that's how they're getting all the businessmen behind them. But it is a real scary thing, too, because these containers will not have to be inspected. They will just go through scanners at the port of entry, which is not even going to be at Texas. It'll be in Kansas City, Missouri. And they will have electronic scanners that scan the trucks carrying the containers. They could have barcodes listed as trinkets from China when they're really weapons of war. Really scary what could be coming in through these big containers coming from China and other countries as well. They could
I share your concern, and I really think people have to understand that our leaders have an entirely different agenda than the average American has. The average American wants to maintain our sovereignty, wants to maintain our freedom, wants to maintain America as an independent nation. Our leaders do not, because they have a different worldview, and they think that we'll be far better off if we destroy the sovereignty of the country, if we enslave the people, and if they don't want to go along with it, they're going to have to be punished. And really what's so incredible about what Michael Chertoff of the Homeland Security Department is saying is he's threatening the American people. If you don't go along with this, there are going to be repercussions. You're not going to be able to fly. You're not going to be able to go into government, federal government buildings. And, of course, they'll be able to bring all sorts of pressure. But I thought we had government that was supposed to represent the people. No, it doesn't. It represents the ruling class who have a different agenda because they worship a different God. And until the American people see these high-handed techniques that, for what they are, has nothing to do with fighting terrorism. Because if they were really fighting terrorism, the first thing they would have done after 9/11 was been to have sealed our borders, and they've steadfastly refused to seal our borders. Anybody can come across, and yet we've had no other major terrorist attacks here in the United States. And most of the people who are being arrested now are being arrested because there were FBI informants that tricked these people into making stupid statements, you know, and actually encourage these people to, you know, join the jihadist movement at the behest of the FBI. And they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to entrap people so we can put them into prison and swell our prison population, which is already over 7 million Americans in prison, probation, or parole.
That's really the truth. Another very scary thing about the Real ID Act that I haven't mentioned is that it grants open-ended authority to the Secretary of Homeland Security to essentially do whatever he wants to do. He can change what he thinks the purposes of are it. He can expand it. He can require more biometric information. And so that's amazing how they've allowed this open-ended carte blanche authority to him. So it's just giving the Secretary of Homeland Security extreme power over all of this. And a quote that I really like by Benjamin Franklin says, "Those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety deserve neither liberty or safety." And I think that's what's happening. Americans, because they've been made to be so afraid of terrorism because of 9/11, and everything else, they're thinking that they've just got to have some kind of a ID card to identify who the terrorists are and who the illegals are, that they're giving up their freedom in the process, and that's what this plan is all about. They want to be able to have a surveying system of all Americans and keep an eye on all of us, and essentially we are giving up all of our freedoms.
And people don't understand that we're not going to catch the terrorists by giving law-abiding citizens or forcing them to carry a federal ID card. You can say, well, of course, what do we have to worry about that? They're setting up databases on every single one of us. They want our pictures. They want our thumbprints. They want our DNA. They want our iris scan. They want to know everything about us. They want to know what library books we read. They want to know what about our medical records. And if you've been to the doctor recently, and they ask you to sign a privacy form, that is as well. They're required to do that by law. Have you read what you're doing? When you sign that form, you're giving up your right to privacy, because any government agency now has the right to get that information, because you might be a terrorist. And any intimate details you've ever had, maybe you've had a sexually a contagious disease, the government will know, and they will be able to use that against you. You know, and anything, problems, psychological problems you've had, they can use that against you, perhaps prevent you from being able to acquire a firearm. Do not be honest with your doctor, because all of his information goes directly to the government. They have the right to look at your medical records. They have a right to look at your library records. They have a right to look at your financial records. And they're doing that on all sorts of innocent American citizens, because they're collecting information just like they did in Hitler's Germany, Stalin's Russia, Benito Mussolini's Italy, Chairman Mao's China. So what can we do? How are we going to get people to be concerned, Orlean?
Well, you're one of the best sources of information, and that's what we have to do, expose this to the light of day for what it really is, and just encourage them to contact their state legislators, take a strong stand against this, and contact their congressmen and ask them to rescind this terrible Real ID Act, and also to join on with those who are willing to sign on to a resolution against this movement towards the North American Union. There are those in states, legislatures, as well as one for our Congress, where I think 40 people have now signed on to it, so it's gaining a little bit of momentum.
Well, I think the important thing is for you out there in the listening audience, if you believe this is a concern, contact your congressman and let them know. Let them know that you don't want to have to carry a federal ID card. Well, Arlene, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, one of the things I write in my... what I started off writing, it's changed a lot now, but I say that I actually heard Phyllis Schlafly speak on this subject probably about 10 years ago when they were first talking about a national ID, and she said one of the privileges of being an American citizen is that you should have your privacy protected and your freedoms and all that the Constitution and the Bill of Rights stands for. And it's perfectly fine if we want foreigners coming in to have some form of an ID, but Americans should be privileged with our wonderful citizenship, that we should have our privacy protected. And so that's how I still strongly feel about this. And we need to do our utmost to keep our privacy and our freedoms protected. And it's going to take a huge effort, because there are some very evil forces out there that want to destroy our freedoms and want to exercise total control over our lives. And this is a spiritual battle as well. If these RFID chips become part of our national ID cards, they will eventually make it inside our bodies, because that's the ultimate goal. That's what Revelation 13 tells us, that they would like to put these little RFID chips inside our right hand, inside our forehead, so that we can be tracked wherever we go, forever and ever. We won't be able to buy and sell without them. So we definitely need to pray and ask the Lord for help in this battle, and to rally our forces, make Christians wake up to what's really happening. And the danger of this, experiments have been done where white mice, as well as dogs that have had these chips, are developing cancer around them, tumors. This is not good for anybody to have such a thing inside it. So for various reasons, we need to take a stand against this.
I agree with you totally, and believe me, they do intend to get people chipped. One of the things we've seen, they had a television campaign not too long ago where a man would talk like a woman and a woman would talk like a man, and of course, the whole idea was identity theft. But they didn't tell you what the solution was. Why? The solution, of course, is to have everybody have a chip in them. Then they can't steal your identity. Isn't that clever? And believe me, of course, they know exactly what they're doing. They're playing games with our minds. They're frightening us all the time about identity theft. But, of course, they have the solution, and that is everybody in America. We'll have a chip, and you'll either buy it or sell, lest you have the mark of the beast, or by that known by the number of his name. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night, and God bless you. Thanks so much for everything you do, Arlene. And please, when you get that article written, why, send me a copy of it, will you?
I certainly will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, Arlene is certainly one of those people who's on the front lines of this battle and doing a wonderful, wonderful job. Well, let me simply point out that we're moving towards a police state. And, of course, you need to get the information. And, of course, if you'd like to get the 4 tapes that we have on the North American community, that's the North American community, 4-tape, 4-CD set, have the great book written by Dr. Jerome Corsi entitled The Late Great USA. That's The Late Great USA. And, of course, you can also get the book on the Minutemen, because it's all part of this discussion of immigration. We have a 4-tape set on immigration and an immigration update. We have a great DVD put out by Glenn Spencer, our good friend, entitled The Conquest of Aztlan. It goes into the background of how the Ford Foundation, these people of great wealth, are funding the illegal organizations or I should say the organizations for illegal immigrants coming into America. Why would you have organizations like La Raza and LULAC and MALDAVE for people coming into this country illegally? Why, very simply, so they'll have representation. Of course, it has to be funded by the Ford Foundation, which has been funding subversion since it was organized. Funded communism and socialism. And if you get the book Foundations, the Power and Influence, which is available to Radio Liberty, that's Foundations, the Power and Influence, you'll begin to understand what is really going on. And so we do hope that many of you out there will give serious consideration to getting this material. Give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And then give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and helping us. As 5 hours every single day, we're on the radio somewhere in America, somewhere in the world, and many times even much more than that, trying to educate people to the fact that we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization. It's under attack today. And, of course, what's going on over in Iraq and Iran is simply a diversion. There's a young man who's sent overseas to fight for freedom. Why we're losing our freedom here at home. And remember, of the original boys who went over to fight in the first Gulf War, 695,000, we've had a 100-hour war, about 160 men killed, most by friendly fire. But of those who've come home, almost 80,000 are no longer living. Almost 80,000 are no longer living. We have the figures from the Veterans Administration. If you doubt what I'm saying, we'll be glad to send it to you free of charge. Understand that they experimented, they ran experiments on our boys and destroyed the health of them, and hundreds of thousands of them are permanently ill. And just as the boys we're bringing home today, certainly hundreds of thousands of them are ill too. And the government just can't figure out what's wrong with them. No, they don't want to. They put them on Prozac, and they've crippled and destroyed their lives. If you'd like to get a copy of the Rockefeller Committee report, it's actually a report from the Veterans Administration, 1994, where they tell you that the government experimented without the knowledge or consent of hundreds of thousands, not 100,000, but hundreds of thousands of American servicemen through the years, and they're experimenting on our boys today again and destroying their lives. Why? Because we're dealing with inherently evil people, and most of the people in government are good people, but there's a small component who know exactly what they're doing, who have a different worldview because they worship a different God. So, ladies and gentlemen, we do hope that many of you will go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. If you want to challenge anything we say, we usually have documentation on it. We hope you'll want to get the four-tape set on the North American community, the book, Late Great USA, The Late Great USA, the four-tape sets on immigration, the DVD, I get, or VHS, and the conquest of Aztlan. America's under attack today. They intend to destroy it. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection. We have a book called Spy Chips. We have a four-tape set on spy chips as well. Please pray for America.